Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so we go now from tillage management to another very important management is irrigation, which effect it has on nitrous oxide emissions. This is a project which was done within a framework of like a national N2O network built up in Australia, a shower slide, which was funded by the Australian Department of Agriculture and the Australian Grain Research and Development Corporation. So the study site, I just want to say a few words about the Australian N2O network, which is coordinated by Peter Grace from the University of Queensland in Brisbane. It looks at a wide range of different agricultural land uses in within Australia, looking from rain-fed grain site to tropical crops like sugarcane, to irrigated grains and cotton, and also to temperate dairy sites. There's also, for people who are interested, like my colleague Louise Barton, I think she has a virtual poster about the rain-fed grain sites in Western Australia for the people who are interested. The study I want to present is the site of the irrigated grains and cotton rotation site. It's the Kingthorpe Research Station from the Department of Primary Industries in Australia, and it's located approximately like 100 to 150 kilometers west of Brisbane. The research site, as I said, it was the Kingthorpe Research Station. It's in the eastern Darling Downs. That's what the reason it's called. It's already in the Murray-Darling Basin. Has a subtropical climate, and it's characterized mainly, like predominantly, it's really heavy clay soils, black vertisols, so-called self-mulching. I have a picture shown here, the self-cracking black clays, and this study site has like a percentage of 70% clay, so it's really heavy clays. The experimental setup was we were able to install our measuring system on an already installed factual experiment from DPI, where they were looking at different irrigation intensities on cotton and winter wheat rotation. We could install our trailer with the measurement equipment. We used an automatic system. I'll explain this later, what we used here in the middle of the plot. And then actually DPI had like four different irrigation rates. We only were able to measure 9 replicates with our system. So we decided to measure the 2 wettest irrigation system and the driest one. So we measured the 50, 60, and 85%. I will just explain in a second what it means, because we had like 3 different irrigation treatments, and it's a bit confusing how it was set up, because usually people understand 85% being the wettest treatment, but the treatments were defined by when the crop will be irrigated again, when the plant available water capacity is depleted. So the fully irrigated one was the 50% one. Keep this in mind. So this was, again, irrigated when 50% of the plant available water was depleted, whereas the 85 one was the driest one. It was irrigated only when 85% of the plant available water was depleted. The hypothesis of this study was that irrigation management can be used to mitigate N2O emission losses from irrigated agricultural systems. And then irrigation and fertilization are the main controllers of N2O emissions in the systems. This is what other studies have shown so far in irrigated agricultural systems, that irrigation and in combination with fertilization has the main impact. The objectives were to determine N2O emissions and the emission factor from winter wheat on this irrigated plaque vertisols. There's not much data about actual N2O emissions from different agricultural system in Australia. This is also the reason for this network, to get better data for the Australian greenhouse gas accounting, to assess the influence of different irrigation intensities on the emissions of N2O, and also to identify how like this irrigation management could be used to mitigate emissions of N2O. The methodology, as I said, like within the whole network and all the sites, we're using automatic measuring systems to get better high temporal resolution. So, I mean, I think everybody working in N2O is aware of the problem of having these laborious manual measurements and high spatial and temporal variability. So we had like this type of manual chambers, automatic chambers placed in the plots. This is on a later stage. Like we had like actually only 15 centimeter chambers, height chambers at the start. Then when the crop grew bigger, like here at the later stage, we had to add extensions to it. From these chambers via Teflon tubes, we could automatically pump air from inside the chambers to our analytical system, which was installed at the trailer, which was installed in the middle of the field, where there was a control box, which automatically controlled the systems, like the chambers. They could be closed and opened pneumatically. And then when they were closed, like on a regular interval, sample air was drawn to the gas chromatograph and a LIQO for CO2, which could be analyzed for N2O and CO2 emissions. Here's like a graph from the chromatogram, where you can see like in these regular intervals, every 10 minutes, one sample was drawn into the gas chromatograph. So we took four samples over 30 minutes and got four samples. And from the linear increase, using the R square as like a quality check, we were able to calculate the flux. Like doing this, I mean, other people mentioned the problem of the manual sampling. Like this, over this winter wheat season, we were able to take like 8,000 single N2O flux measurements. Oops, no, can go on. So going to the results, this is a lot of information now in one picture. So it's like the daily average emissions to make the graph better understandable of the different treatments over the entire season, keeping in mind 50% the treatment with the highest irrigation rate, 85% the driest irrigation. Here in the bars, the red arrows, they show application of fertilizer. It was a total of 200 kilograms of N applied to the system. It's like a very high load of N fertilizer. And then also the blue bars here show irrigation or rain events that happened. And as you can see, like here for the 50% treatment, what we expected, that like main emissions, like these emission pulses, what I call them, usually happen after usually combined irrigation and fertilization, like you can see here and here, or like after like heavy fertilization, heavy irrigation alone. What you can see, if you look at the different treatments, then of course then timing of the fertilization, of the irrigation can play a major role. Like they have to say like the fertilizer application was of course the same for all three treatments. But you can see then of course like the timing of the irrigation could delay or like really trigger these emission pulses. But as well, what I want to show like for these two irrigation and fertilization events in detail, that also what I want to show here for this like 1 week, the amount of irrigation really had a substantial impact on the emissions of N2O. It's like in this situation, we had like very dry soil conditions in August, and like the application of 50K of urea per hectare on the field. And then we had like subsequent irrigation on the different treatments. First, the 50% treatment got irrigated with like 57 millimeters of irrigation water. Then the 60% treatment, and then the next day, the 85% treatment, and only with like 20 millimeters of irrigation water. And as you can see, this of course results in quite a different amplitude of nitrous oxide emissions. This is also what we of course expected. And if you look at the sum over this, how many days is it? 9 days, you can see that it's really a significant difference in cumulative N2O emissions over this time. The same I want to show for the next irrigation next fertilization irrigation event. Like 70 millimeters of irrigation water was applied on the 50% treatment, 35 millimeters on the 60% treatment, and twice 13 millimeters on the 85% treatment. And as you can see, this of course completely affects the dynamics. Results like in the 50% treatment, where the high rate of irrigation water was applied in a, like a high peak, and then a less pronounced peak in the 60% treatment, and a smaller peak but longer lasting due to the two irrigation events in the 85% treatment. Also looking at the sum over these 10 days, you can see that it's like significantly higher in the N2O treatment. Looking at the cumulative emissions over the season of the wheat, of the winter wheat N2O emissions, you can see that in total, the emissions were like 700, like 350 to 700 grams of N2O over the season, which is compared to other systems not a lot. But what you can see is that, like, I mean, you have like these jumps in the emissions actually when irrigation was applied, or basically in combination with fertilization. So here the results combined in a table. So we have the average flux rate. It was interesting, there was no significant difference between the 60% treatment and the 85% treatment. The average flux and the seasonal flux was significantly higher in the 50% treatment. This was also what we expected. The emission factors calculated, they are also not corrected for background emissions. This is just the emission, the percentage of the N2O that was of the fertilizer N that was released as N2O, considerably low, from 0.4 or 0.2 to 0.4%. So these systems, despite like really receiving high loads of water and fertilizer, are actually very low emitting systems. And you can see, and then the different irrigation amounts I talked about. What is but also very important, of course, looking at a system like this, you also have to consider the yield in relation to nitrous oxide emitted for deriving best management practices for mitigation options. And if you have a look at the yields, ton per hectare, then of course, like the fully irrigated treatment had the highest yield, but had like a similar or like a lower kilogram N2O-N emission per ton yield than compared to the 85% treatment. So for really giving recommendations of mitigating N2O emissions, really one has to take into account the yield, because I think that's the most important factor. What was surprising this year, that was actually this big difference between the 50% and the 60% treatment, and only a very small difference between the 60 and the 85% treatment, which probably can be attributed, like the season before, there was a similar experiment, there was the 60% treatment yield was a lot closer at the 50% yield. I don't know exactly the reason for this year, but there were some problems with crown rot, and we had a small hail damage at one stage, so I probably attribute it to this, and like, most likely, I would say probably like the optimal practice, but I mean this of course has to be confirmed, would be somewhere here in between, that we can optimize the yield but still reduce the N2O emissions. Another thing I wanted to point out, which really puzzled me a little bit, is like this first, actually the biggest emission peak we have at the start, and if you look at the management at the start, like 100 kN of urea was applied with the during planting of the wheat, and then the fields were irrigated with the same amount. All treatments were irrigated with the same amount. But I also zoom in here, and you can see that despite there was no difference in management at this stage, and despite we had really this randomized block design, we still have a high spatial influence and have significant higher emissions in the 50% treatment. Where I don't know, this was a randomized block design before. It got changed again for the new season. We also took like mineral N measurements. I didn't show it here. There was no significant difference in mineral N in the soil. But you can see that it's like a high spatial influence still, which of course makes the data really hard to interpret. This is like the diurnal emissions shown. Maybe I go back like for these 3 days here. For the three replicate chambers we were working with, you can see, I mean, that it follows quite nicely, or it's like the soil temperature during these times is like a main controller of the N2O emissions. But you can see that actually between the 60% and the 85% treatment, there's no significant difference, but that like between the 50% and the other two treatments, there's a significant difference. And this is mainly one chamber had more than double emissions of N2O. So the conclusions of these studies, one, objective was just to derive the emission factors for these cropping systems, and they were surprisingly low considering how much water and nitrogen was applied, only 0.2 to 0.4%. So compared with the IPCC values, they are a lot lower. We also attribute this to low carbon content in the soil. The soils are quite depleted at carbon, and we think that this is the main reason for this low N2O emissions. Irrigation and fertilizations turned out to be the main controllers of the N2O emissions. And we think the timing and amount of irrigation can effectively be used to reduce N2O losses from irrigated agricultural systems by basically avoiding high amounts of irrigation water right after fertilization. Rather, irrigate lesser amount more often, especially after fertilization when like these really high emission peaks happen. But then, of course, for best management practices, of course, the ratio of N2O emissions to crop yield has to be taken into account. And then, despite the randomized plot design we had in this study, we still found a very high spatial influence that actually made it hard to interpret the data. And I thank you.
What you define as the spatial influence, could that be because of the more Levi ribosphere carbon in your 50% treatment, because you have a higher diameter?
Yeah, but this, later in the season, I would agree, but I mean, it was right after planting, so there shouldn't be a difference. No, right after planting. Oh, does it answer your question, or you're not happy?
One more.
With the 200 kilos of nitrogen applied and 3 tons of yield being produced, is that fairly typical of farmer operations, or is that...
No, this is not really... It's a lot of nitrogen, and as I said, we also had problems with disease and hail damage. Thing is, why these high rates of nitrogen were applied, that is actually a study that looked at water use in crops. And like the guys who are working together from DPI, they wanted to rule out that nitrogen is a limiting factor.
And can I have a quick question about it? Have you measured a difference between inside and outside your measurement chamber about the wheat yield?
No, but we moved the chambers on a regular basis. So we didn't. The base was still there, but we moved the chambers on a regular basis. But you will always, I mean, having this constantly in the chambers will always affect your crop, especially on like a later base. So like later in the season, it could also be a reason that like, I mean, you might have some reduced uptake inside the chambers. This is why we every 2 weeks, more or less, we try to move the chambers between the bases we had installed to keep the impact minimal. But it's still, I mean, it's visible at the crops that you have an impact.
Thank you.
Thank you.